갈게요.
When Soviet tanks rolled into Prague in the night from August the 20th to the 21st, 1968, the Czechoslovak radio building was one of the first places that they tried to bring under control. In the process, the building was damaged, several people were killed and dozens injured. Broadcasts went on in secret for several days, keeping the world informed of what was really happening, initially from within the building itself, and then from other locations in the city, using mobile studios and transmitters.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia, broadcasting continuously in English, French, German, and Italian, as well as Czech, and bringing you late news bulletins and reports as we receive them of the situation here in occupied Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovak news agency announced a short while ago that four leading representatives of Czechoslovakia's political life have been abducted from the building of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia in Prague and taken to an unknown destination.
This is Radio Prague, the legal station of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic.
The story of how radio staff defied the invaders is well known. But what we hear far less often is what happened at the radio in the weeks and months that followed. The answer may come as a surprise. Almost within days, things went back to normal. Once the Soviets had bullied the Czechoslovak leadership into accepting the invasion, their next step was to create the illusion that nothing very drastic had happened. At the radio, this meant that initially no one was sacked or purged, and people just went back to their jobs. And it was just at this time, literally days after the invasion, that a 24-year-old English woman started working here at Radio Prague. Her name was Liz Skelton, and a few weeks ago I had the opportunity to record an interview with her as she revisited the building where she had worked 40 years before. She began by telling me how she came to be in Prague at such an extraordinary time.
Well, it was a little impulsive. I had a friend in England who was half Czech and half English, and when the Russians invaded in August of 68, he had to make a significant decision, which was whether to come back to live in Czechoslovakia with the risk that he couldn't leave again or stay in England. He decided to come back, and I decided to come with him. Not knowing how long I would end up staying, I thought I might be here for a few weeks. It was impulsive, but it turned out to be a very interesting time, and I ended up staying for, I think, about 18 months, or nearly 2 years.
And this was, in fact, just after the Soviet invasion, so it was a time of great uncertainty and concern here in Czechoslovakia, and also nobody had the faintest idea what was going to happen, did they, in the next
No,
year
they didn't at all, and nor did I, obviously, and I was truthfully very politically naive. I was 24 years old in 1968 and really had very little knowledge of what could happen walking into a communist country at the time. But we actually drove here and crossed the border, I think about 5 days after the invasion, and there were tanks quite visible. We arrived sort of in the dead of night, and I wondered what on earth I'd come to. It was very dark and bleak. And actually, in the first couple of nights, you could hear, whether it was tank fire or gunfire, there were still, you know, some skirmishes going on until things settled in a bit. But in the following months, there were a lot of demonstrations. There was some very interesting pictures that I actually smuggled out of the country for a fellow called Josef Kordelka, who's very famous here now, I guess.
A very well-known photographer.
Yes, but he took photos of the crowds climbing up on tanks and, I guess, yelling at these young Soviet soldiers who were rather offended because they thought they'd come in to save everybody, and in fact they got a very, very unfriendly reception.
And how about the radio? I mean, you started working at Radio Prague. How did that come about? Because obviously it was a time when the Soviets were beginning to want to clamp down on Radio Prague, and there had even been fighting this building.
That's true, but in fact, well, let me tell you first of all how I came to work here. Pavel, who was my boyfriend at the time, had worked in the English section of Radio Prague before he had gone to England for 6 months. So when he came back, he wanted to continue to work part-time at the radio. He was actually studying, doing a degree at Charles University, but as a part-time employee, he had worked at the radio. And when we came up to see his former colleagues, I was asked if I had ever had any broadcasting experience because they needed another voice in the English section. And I said, no, I certainly hadn't had any broadcasting experience. But they said, well, let's do a mic test. So they put me in front of a mic. At the time, I incidentally had a much more British accent than I now have, as I've lived in North America for a long time. Anyway, they put me in front of a mic and they said, oh, that's fine. We'll give you a job. So I started to work here part-time and I read the news. I had a weekly program with a lovely fellow called Franta Fröhlich, where we just chatted about local happenings, and I think I introduced a few concerts. But interestingly, Dubček was still in power at the time, and there was still virtually no censorship for quite a long time. The news broadcasts were, as far as I remember, very truthful. There was no propaganda. I think there was still a lot of optimism, despite the fact that the Soviets had rolled in the tanks. I think people were still very rebellious and not accepting at all of going back to the old regime. So for a long time, broadcasting was absolutely unfettered.
And I believe that it was really in the spring of 1969 that the screw began to tighten and that people began to be checked and sacked. Many people were sacked.
Exactly.
Do you remember that time as well?
I do. It became rather grim, and it got to a point where actually people started to mistrust each other a bit. You weren't quite sure who you could confide in. And
you must have been under pressure to read things that you didn't believe in as well.
I was, and I must admit I had to stop doing that. I had to start refusing to read some of the news items because, you know, my parents were back in England and somewhat masochistically listening to me every night.
So they must have been a little bit worried. I mean,
They were very worried. My mother in particular was worried that I was going to be spirited away by the Russians and never seen again, which was probably a possibility, but at my age, and rather naive as I was, it didn't really cross my mind that could happen. But no, it did get to a point where I really couldn't work here anymore. And eventually, in fact, I was summoned by the police to have what you could describe as an interrogation. I mean, it wasn't, they didn't threaten me with anything, but they actually said I shouldn't have been working at the radio for all that time because I came in on a student visa and I wasn't technically allowed to work. So they basically said, you simply can't work at the radio anymore. But in a way, I was relieved that I couldn't, because it was getting to a point where I really couldn't broadcast much of what was put in front of me.
And you must have a lot of memories of what it was like here at the radio at the time. I mean, we're now sitting in a studio in the new radio building, which is just behind the old radio building where you were working. This is all very high-tech and modern. Right. It must have been quite different in the late 60s, I should imagine. What was it like there working in the radio?
Well, it was obviously everything was much less high tech, and we had those old two-sided tape recorders with reels and reels of tape, which occasionally something went wrong and the tape broke and it all sort of ended up on the floor. And, you know, the editing the tape was literally cutting and pasting. Everything, I guess, was done more slowly. No computers, and I don't think there were a whole lot of copies of recordings. In fact, it would be lovely to find a recording from back then.
We haven't found any recordings of you, unfortunately, from that time, which is a great shame.
It is a shame, but no, it was fun. I mean, it was a bit nerve-wracking for me, having never done anything like that before. And I think probably if I were to listen to a recording from back then, I'd be terribly embarrassed because I think my voice was very flat. I had no acting experience. And someone once told me, actually, I sounded rather like the Queen, which is not, I don't consider a great compliment because she has rather a monotonous voice.
Well, you certainly don't sound like the Queen.
I think my accent's been corrupted a little.
So at the time, the English section was actually much bigger than it is now. You've seen today we have 8 people in the English section, plus freelancers like myself. It was bigger then, wasn't it? It was
a much
bigger operation.
Yes, it was a fairly major operation.
And it's interesting because, I mean, it was obviously at the height of the Cold War, but from what you're saying, the atmosphere seems to have been very relaxed.
It was.
Very un-Cold War.
It was for about a year. And I think that was totally a reflection of what was called the Prague Spring, where people were so excited all of a sudden to have a taste of the Western way of life. And it wasn't at all what I had imagined living in a communist country would be. But then I came at the best possible time, you know. But by the time I left in early 70, people were getting rather reticent to confide in others. The political conversations were fewer and farther between, and you know, it was a much less open society generally. Yeah.
And so you managed to stay on at Radio Prague until the end of 69 or the beginning of 1970, but you didn't go back home immediately, did
No,
you?
I think I probably left Radio Prague at the end of 1969, but I didn't leave Czechoslovakia until probably the spring of 1970. And what I did actually, I taught English to a group of people who I think were then in what was called the Ministry of Industry, and I don't truthfully remember how I got that job, but I did teach English, and I also a couple of times flew across the country to Slovakia and taught a group of businessmen English, which yet again was something I had no experience in. So my whole time in Czechoslovakia was doing things that I had no training in at all.
Rapid learning curve.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually you decided to leave.
I did, eventually, yes. And I don't think anybody really kicked me out of the country, but it came to a point where I almost felt guilty being here with the friends that I had, who were Czech and who just simply didn't have the freedom that I had to walk in and out. And I knew that I could always leave when I wanted to because I had a British passport. And it was becoming a bit depressing to be in this environment, truthfully.
And at that time, were you still with your boyfriend there?
Well, actually, no, we had gone our separate ways as a couple, but we were still friends. And when I left, he was still here. But he did actually want to leave. He had a British passport and a Czech passport, but as long as he was in Czechoslovakia, he was considered to be Czech. But he actually wanted to get out and go to England. And I was actually able to arrange that for him by, once I was back in England, putting together a bunch of documents, most of which I forged with a lot of fancy-looking sealing wax and stamps on them and flourishing signatures, the essence of which was that we were going to get married in England. And that was one of the only reasons which would justify an exit visa from Czechoslovakia at the time. So I sent all these things to Pavel, and he was actually able to get out of the country on the pretext he was going to be marrying me in England a few months later. And from then on, he actually got a job at the BBC. And from what you told me, he's worked there until quite recently.
And you didn't, in fact, stay in England, did you?
No. About 6 months later, I actually went to Canada and ended up staying in Canada for 10 years and then went off to New York for 10 years and ended up staying in North America.
And you didn't follow a career in broadcasting. I understand you studied law.
Yes, yes. No, I gave up broadcasting. I don't think it was really a career that was meant for me in the first place. I don't think it was really my forte.
How does it feel then to be coming back? I mean, to be seeing these places that you haunted 40 years ago.
It's wonderful, actually. It's wonderful. I think it's thrilling to see what's happened to Prague. I mean, Prague was really a very bleak, a beautiful but bleak city under communism. And it is just gorgeous now. I mean, the buildings have been restored, the economy's booming, and it's really a delightful place to be. I mean, I would love to come back and spend quite a few weeks here. It's really thrilling. I mean, I'm sort of wandering around looking at places I used to hang out in, and it's amazing how everything has developed. And as I say, it was always a beautiful city, but it had never been allowed to flourish, really. Not at the time I was here, anyway.
So, Liz Skelton, thank you very much indeed for coming back into the studio after all these years. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, and thank you for helping me try to find a recording. Maybe we'll come up with something eventually, but it's lovely to be here.
If any of our listeners happen to have recordings from late 1968 or early 1969 at home of our broadcasts, do have a listen. And if you do come across Liz Skelton's voice, we'd be delighted if you could send us a copy. Thank you.
Thanks.